אסתר פרק דלת. ומרדכי ידעת כל אשר נעשה, ויקרא מרדכי את בגדיו ויפש שק ואפר, ויצא בתוך העיר ויזעק זעקה גדולה ומרה. So as we explained yesterday, that today I think to once again bring this out. There's a number of very, very important nakudas in this pasuk, some of which we've already discussed in the context of the previous parak, some of them which we need yet to discuss. So Mordechai knew everything that was happening, which clearly implies that there was a reason not to know. In other words, that it was not public information, and that was the meaning of the ambiguity of the Yerushalayim Novocha, not that it was obvious. So one thing is clear. He went out to publicize what was going on. Don't think that it's going to stay on the table. I know about it, and everybody is going to know about it, and that's the simple meaning of the verse. He went out to publicize. Chazal tell us that one of the astonishing things here was that the Vayizak Zaka Gedola Umara was a response to the Zaka Gedola Umara that Yaakov Avinu had caused Esav to cry out when he had taken away from the brachas. Now, as we pointed out yesterday, and I think it's kedai to just speak about it in a concentrated form, the only possible way that that could be a meaningful response of Purim is, first on a level, we need to understand that Vayizak Zakar Gedola Mara on the part of Esav is the only time that Esav really cared about something. A Zakar Gedola Umara is not a standard loss. It's a loss of something that is so profound. It's not the very thing that he said before, Vayivez Esav et HaBechorah, and now he says that et Berchati and Bechorati, as if like, I don't understand, that's what it was, that you were Mavaza. And yet here he insists on mentioning it, which in fact raises Yaakov's suspicions that, well, so then you don't deserve it if you've already sold your Bechorah. What is that supposed to mean? How can a person sell his birthright? But now you care all of a sudden. So that means that there was something that had been left in Esav that he could care about, and he cared about it because he saw that in that point he shares with Yaakov. Now, as we saw yesterday, what this implies is that indeed there is something missing in Yaakov Avinu that allows Esav to see in him something that something that he could share. So that if Yaakov would in fact have been completely shalom in what it is to be Israel, then there would have been nothing that Esav would have desired of his at all. In exactly the same way that we find Lo Yachmod Ish et Arzecha, that when your land is your land and you go up to the Beit HaMikdash, you can leave the doors unlocked. No one will be coming. Not miraculously alone, because nobody desires something that is so totally and completely defined by the way it's related to in a different way. It's not mine. I have no connection, no interest in that kind of life. There is no way that Christianity would have been born if it hadn't been that Jews had in them elements of Christianity. The fact that Jesus is a good Jewish boy, so to speak, the way we joke about it, means that in our mind, there's really elements of our religiosity that is not fundamentally different than what it is that Esav found that he could relate to. If Yaakov had been totally Yisrael, Esav would have looked, this is what I want. I don't want it. Exactly the way Yaakov had indicated initially to him. You want the Bechorah. Of course I don't want the Bechorah. As the Zohar pointed out, Yaakov had to pay him for the Bechorah. He would have paid Yaakov to take the Bechorah. How much he hated the Bechorah. I'm sick, he walks in. I'm sick. I'm dead. I'm tired of life. I don't want anything to do with it. I'm ayef anochi. That's an existential definition, the anochi. Sick and tired of everything. So you don't want any future. No, I don't want any. Just let me have today, and that's all that I care about. That means that in the subsequent interrelationship, Esav identified in Yaakov elements of, hey, I could have that, and have what it is that Yaakov has too. So that means that the Zakah Gedola Umara needed to address elements that were indeed lacking in Yaakov. That comes out in one beautiful location, which Purim is meant as a tikkun for. And that is the moment of the Gid HaNasheh. Esav wins when it comes to the Gid HaNasheh, right? Yaakov can't stand against him in that one element. Now that one element is indeed, as the Zohar explains, it's obvious from the Gemara, but then the nature of the Gittin Asher is that it provides for your ability to maintain a standing position. You lose that position, and it's called Pshitat Regel, which is bankruptcy, which has to do with money, which has to do with the money of the Shkolim, which has to do with the Adonim of the Beis HaMikdash. And the other issue, as the Gemara in Chulin makes clear, it has to do with reproduction. It has to do with sex. Because as the Gemara in Chulin says, that the nerve that runs down to create, it's the way the Gemara views it, the nerve that runs down to become the Gittin Asher is split and is actually part of the system that allows you to reproduce it, to have an erection, and so on and so forth. So that means that the Gittin Asher itself was an indication of elements in Yaakov Avinu that failed without Esav. And since they failed without Esav, he was unable to develop the world completely without Esav. And that means that Esav had, in fact, an achiza on Yaakov in that area. And we know that the two aspects of independence that allow you to stand on your own, those are the Durabonan holidays, Chanukah and Purim, which are Keneged, Purim Keneged Netzach, which is Moshe Rabbeinu's Midah, which was the very Midah that, as Shmuel HaNavi points out, is how Esther became queen. The Midah that took away the Malchus from Shaul, Netzach Yisrael, Lo Yinachem, Lo Yishaker. And that Netzach, and that's, we mentioned before, that the entire Purim is built around Moshe Rabbeinu, whose Midah is Netzach. Of the Netzach, of course, has meanings not only of eternity, but of the absolute necessity of winning. And of it, the one who leads the orchestra, the conductor, Lama Natzeach. And so, the two legs, Kabbalistically, the two legs are Purim and Chanukah, Netzach V'Hod, which is Chanukah, we went through at great length to explain how it is that Chanukah dresses Hod and is connected to the foot of Yaakov Avinu, the Tikkun of the Gittin Asher. So too, the day of the loss of the Gittin Asher, every one of the days is connected one of the 365 Gidim, that's Shasa Gidim, right? It's 365 pieces of the body that Chazal identify as separate areas. The Gittin Asher is connected Tisha B'Av. That is the day that day of the year, which is the Churban HaBayit, that means the rebuilding of the Bayit, is dependent actually in these two specific elements that relate to Gula, Chanukah and Purim. Now, if we're saying Vayizak is it means that this is the moment that Mordechai is coming to address specifically those aspects of Yaakov that Esav was able to relate to and see as something that he could have had to, and that's why he felt the loss. Now, as we saw yesterday, that's precisely the integration between the Hishtachavoya Letzelem and the attendance of the party that Rashi views as both being correct, and that this is what Mordechai found out. Umordechai yada, as Rashi says, Balach Haloma Marlo, Sheiskimu El Yonim Lefishishtach Vuletzel Bimenum Vuchanetzer Venenu Misu Data Hashver. Two anti-opinions in the Gemara. The antithetical opinions here, they become a single unit, because as we understood the nature of Lifanim, that Shimon Bar Yochai told us to Stalvina, you believe you can act on the level of Lifanim, and if you believe you can, and you can relate to that, so can Esav. And this becomes the entire America, which everything is nothing but veneer. There doesn't need to be anything else. The entire European civilization, it's veneers. Scratch the surface, you're talking pure barbarian. So that there's this sense of a civilization that is interested in nothing but the funny. And that's all. It's all about spin, and it's all about TV, and it's all about appearances, and it's all about covering defects, and it's all about pretending that there are no toilets, there are bathrooms, pretending there are no cemeteries, there are no bate kvoros, there are, what do they call them now?
Memorial parks.
Yes, memorial parks.
Really?
Yes. Yes, there is no death, there is passing on. No, it certainly opens the door for, I mean, it's the relationship to Amalek communism, the doublespeak dictatorship, this is Bovo and the Nimrod and so on. It's all a question of how it's presented and the power of language to deal with not reality, but facade. Which, of course, takes us back to clothing, which is so central to the whole story. Nakedness is central to the whole story. The idea that you can get to the bottom of things by stripping off your clothes, this is idiotic. So The idea, therefore, of Asiya Lefanim, and the fact that Mordechai here insists that the Lefanim has to be the Penim. Esther says the Lefanim, the face, has to be the Penim, the inside. So that when Esther says, just put on nice clothes, so that the Allah, no. No, we'll talk through messengers. I will not put on nice clothes. He sends them back, right? It's all part of the idea now. He has stripped his begotten that allow him to be come in belavush sak. You're not allowed to come. Alright, so then I won't come. This is what it is. And they're not going to cover it with their ambiguities either. I'm going to be zoig zakagadu olam hara and let everybody know that this is what it's about. And so in putting on sak ve'efer, Chazal say, that sak ve'efer, the core of that sak ve'efer, was misha tafas Yaakov Avinu et ha-sak dichtiv ha-yosem sak at the destruction of what he felt was the destruction of Yosef shuv lo zaz bibanav. This is the next indication, as we've seen before, that what was happening over here, the Vayashvu Lishtot, was the way that Mechirat Yosef had taken place. So too, the effect on all of Klal Yisrael was, again, exactly as Hanukkah comes to address from its point of view, the breakdown between the factions in Yisrael. So too does the Yechidi over here, Mordechai, who takes Yehuda and Binyamin and puts them together, Ish Yehudi, Ish Yemini, comes to address exactly the same issues from a completely different point of view, which we're going to see in this parak, and that's why it's introduced in this fashion. This parak is the center philosophy and theme of the meaning of the entire book, and the paradigm change occurs here. Everything else is secondary. It's just the way that things work out. But the clarity of the moment of change, in which the entire vision of what Hanhagas HaKadosh Baruch Hu was, what a Beis HaMikdash is meant to be, how it is that we're supposed to lead our lives in the presence of God, all of that changes here, and therefore creates the openness to the Torah Shebaal Peh, the Kimu V'Kibla Yudim, which comes afterwards, the Hatzolah from Yehuda, of Yisrael, which is a mere afterthought. Because remember, the point was already there. The refuah was there before the Makkah. You just needed to discover the pivot around which all of this is moving. And it's Mordechai who discovered that pivot. Vayavo ad lifnei sha'ar ha-melech. Now, he could only get up to, even though it was Yoshev v'sha'ar ha-melech. That was his job. They didn't allow him in. Ki ein lavo el sha'ar ha-melech v'levush sak. Amazingly, this is the mocker in the Gemara for how do you know that you're not allowed to spit in the Beit HaMikdash? Because you're not even allowed to become L'Shar HaMelech V'Levush Sak. So the very book that describes the way in which they're attempting to create an alternative, the Shushan HaBira, the Big Day Kuhuna, every last aspect, the Aseret Alafim Shkolim, which is connected to Shkolim that build the Mishkan, this becomes the makor of how to treat the Beis HaMikdash. The irony is just it's beautiful. It's just the attitude of not having dignity and honor. Yes, of course. We talked about this at length. Not a bira, hachona, a bira sherachinoti. It's a mamuchan bira. Where are you? Uvechol medina u'medina. So where am I? Turn the wrong page? No, here I am. Uvechol medina u'medina, which means that he succeeded in letting everybody know. In other words, ultimately, it became clear that makom asher dvar ha-melech v'dato magia, whatever it was, and that the ambiguity was about, and we pointed out, obviously the Goyim picked it up, and obviously the Jews would pick it up, and there may have been sealed letters to be opened on the day when it came to the other people, as the Maamar points out. But in any event, his pirso, even though it literally couldn't have reached them in terms of radio messages and so on, but went along with the gradual spread of the Dvar HaMelech itself. And there was an evil gadol ayudim. Says the Gemara, wait a minute, the Medrash, what is an evil gadol? I mean, there's no evil gadol and evil katan. I mean, everything is lost. What is there an evil? I mean, evil, obviously. Loss is loss. Death is death. Destruction is destruction. What is evil gadol? Says the Medrash beautifully. Evil gadol, normally an evil is after loss. After loss, there's no growth in avilut. There's a gradual tapering off of avilut. Over here, every day was another day closer to destruction. So the clarity of the knowledge and the standing in front of your end was, all right, now there's only X number of days, now there's X minus one number of days, and so on. So each day was a sense of increasing evil. And so those who were close to Esther, we see here clearly, is that they were aware of a very close relationship between her and Mordechai. Because otherwise, I mean, what they were telling her for, Vayagidulah. And they tell her what's going on. Vatischalchala hamalkah ma'od, she became completely broken. And her insides poured out, so to speak, which the Gemara says that she actually was pirsan nida. All right, so I'll do it again. And so there was not only a response of Evel, put the two together, but there was a Chazor HaBetshuva, Tzom, this was even before the Achrazas HaTzom that would come later, crying, Hesped, which is clearly here that no one had died, can only be misspaid as to what it is that we have lost as a people. And everyone was able to participate, the Rabbim, participate in the sense of connection to the Sakveifer of Mordechai. So that he achieved, whether directly through communication or indirectly through opening up Shaarei Shamayim, a responsiveness on the part of Yisrael. Meanwhile, Vatavona Narot Esther Vasarisea. Oh, those who had been appointed specifically for Esther, clearly with a special relationship to her and aware of how much Mordechai meant to her, that there was a relationship, they told her, Vayagidula, that they've seen that Mordechai is not coming into the Shaar HaMelech, and there he is dressed in sack va'efer, and she was absolutely broken. What something horrifying must have happened. But tischalchala malkah ma'od is the word of tischalchala zosher of chilul. It's like your insides pour out. So that in her case would be that she burst out in nidot, or we find the same idea of all lakes turn to water, which is a sense of losing control of your bladder. That type of sense of that is chalchal. So that the shock. Bechala? That's chalchal is an inside emptiness, losing control of that which you keep in. So it's a becoming empty. And here in the sense of shock, which the Gemara actually uses this as a makor to the fact that the hormonal impact of shock changes the dinim of nidais. It's just so shocking to her. It gives you a sense of the shock that she's going through, not fear. It was something where you lose control of your bladder, mimela. That's an instant of fear or something. But over here, it means there's an entire systemic reaction which would cause everything to change. And she sends clothing to dress him so that at least she could talk to him. Obviously, he had plenty of clothing for himself. The point was that she was indicating that, can you just do this for a moment? And let me talk to you. Let me hear what's going on. Veloki Beli refused to put it on. Here we get a sense. It's amazing. Until like the pasuk before, did you realize that there were people who were into her secrets and understood what she needed? And no. She sounded like there was no overall marechet. There was no support. She was just sort of hiding out in the palace. But that's not true at all. We see from here that there were people that were taking care of her, male and female people. Not only that, greatest of all is Hasach. Now we see, as Chazal tell us, who is Hasach? Hasach is Daniel. Maybe he's called Hasach because Chotchu Migdulato, that he had been the leading advisor to the king all the way up until the time of Achashverosh that we saw. And that at the time of Achashverosh, indeed part of the hatred of the Jews of Achashverosh would be to destroy Daniel. And the reason it would have happened, says the Gemara, is because of the Eitzah Teva that he had given to the Nebuchadnezzar, which we understood to mean an Eitzah Teva on a personal level, his connection to him as an individual, rather than as something that was being done for the Malchus, where over there it's indeed that all of the Nivruchu B'chol Kol Mishpachot HaAdama, but this is not Mishpachot. So that's one pshat in the Gemara, but there were Chotei Chim Migdulato, and during the years of Achashverosh, he was no longer Choshev, so that he became, from the point of view of the Malchus, this would be exactly the right place for that uppity Jew. Let him be a servant to the new queen. Of course, it was absolutely perfect because it gave Esther access to the only individual that had been there the whole time, knew every last element of the Malchus from the inside, had all of the vision of where things were going and what was happening, was the complete establishment where Mordechai was on the outs to some extent. which is amazing. So she calls Hasak. Yeah, I mean, it's so beautiful. That, and you don't get any of this until you actually, it just happens to be mentioned on the sides. Now you understand. The other pshat in Hatak.
Yes, yes,
yes, he's very old.
So he's making him run back and forth?
By the way, so is she.
How old is she?
In her 80s.
What?
But it doesn't matter.
How old is Mordechai?
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. All of these people are young when they're old.
She was born at the same time as him. Why is it laughing?
Because she came with Mordechai from the time of the original Colossus.
How old is Mordechai?
All right, there's certain things that are not meant to be brought out. Okay?
Yeah, why is that the time?
Because it ruins the story.
It does.
Yeah, it's okay? Terrible.
Okay, fine. But that's what I'm saying. It really doesn't matter.
Okay.
Because in terms of the hofa'ah, of how everybody saw her and how she related to what she really was, it's like calling Yocheved old. She wasn't old. The chronological age was irrelevant.
And we know that Hatach is Daniel from.
This is a Kabbalah. There is a lot. There are other shittas, but this is Rav and Shmuel both. I mean, the Machlokas is wide. Yeah. Shmuel says he's called Hasach on the contrary, because he was still so choshev that Kol Divrei HaMalchut Nechtachim Al Yado. He was always the one who had the final say in all issues of the Malucha. So he was still an extremely important tsar. Now, he goes out. So she says, Vatetzaveu al Mordechai. So she, Tetzaveu al Mordechai. Remember, we find that same Lashon with Moshe and Paro and so on, how it is that he is to talk and to deal with the issue. So she says, look, I want certain things. She doesn't say what that I want. But what I want to derive is, Ladat Maze, what in the world is this about? The Almaze, and what is the cause of all of this, which Chazal see as a remiss to the Luchas, Mazeh, Mazeh, Mizeh, Umizeh, Him Ktuvim, which of course is what this is all coming to address at the end anyway, which is the Shviras HaLuchas, Shikha, the coming of Amalek, the destruction that was directly Nogea, the inability of Klal Yisrael to be mekabel the Torah in the first place, which required the second Luchas, which were on Yom Kippurim, which of course is the day Kippurim, which is similar to Purim and touches for the first time on Pur. So the remez to Mazeh and Mazeh is a beautiful remez. But she also, as the Medrash says, she said to him, look, there has never been a time in our history, ever, if you think about it, in which there was a gezeira against the entirety of Klal Yisrael. Never. What is this about? I mean, what was so unbelievably new that we should come to this kind of impasse? It doesn't make sense. And so vayaged lo Mordechai et kol asher karahu. As the Gemara says, he brought out the fact that this was all about Mikra. It was all about asher korcha bader karahu. Those who take advantage of carry. And that's what it's all about. So he tells us, Lech emorla, go tell her, ben beno shel karahu ba'alena. It's the original, the great-great-great-grandson of the original Asher Korcha Baderach. And that's what we're dealing with over here. And he told her about Veit Parashat HaKesef, Asher Aman Nishkol HaGinzei HaMelech BaYehudim LaAbdam, about the money that had been promised to buy Yisrael. Of course, that is the Gemara relates, the Medrash relates it to V'nimkartem Sham LoOyvechem V'ein Koneh. He refused to even take the money. And so, Veit Patshegen Kitavadat HaShenitan B'Shushan HaShvidam Natan Lo. He actually had a copy then of the original decree, and he gave to Hatach a copy, Laharot et Esther, to show it to Esther, Ula Agidla, and to tell her all of these details, Ula Tzavot Aleha, and to command her now. Command her, my gosh, I mean, she does everything that Mordechai says. Does he need to command her? Et Ma'amar Mordechai Kiyam, Ki Mordechai Amarla, Asher. I mean, this is all, you know, this is the ultimate tzivui. The same lashon that we've, I mean, if Mordechai is mitzaveh, he's mitzaveh something very fundamental. Tziva leha, which we find before. This was the same lashon, tziva haman. So over here, he's mitzaveh aleha. Absolute. There's nothing. Let's not even discuss this. You have to go to the king, lovo al hamelech, leitchanen lo. Ulevakesh milefanav al hama. You must beg him, ask him. You remember that Lashon? It was at the same moment of the Gid HaNashe. Bacha vayitchanen lo. That is exactly what happened at the end of the story of the Gidan Moshe, is that the Tsar of Esav had to be Bocha Vayitchanenlo. Of course, this is all of the issues that happened over here, is the impact of those moments. And Hasach arrives, Vayaged Le'Esther Tivrei Mordechai, telling over exactly what it was that Mordechai had said. And, of course, we expect her to do exactly what she is told, because she always does, doesn't she? And instead, what happens is, Vatomer Esther Lahasach, and says, if we're talking about Sivuyim over here, I have my own Sivuyim. But the Tzaveyu El Mordechai, she commands him what it is that she's supposed to say to Mordechai, and what he has to get across. Now looky here. All of those who work in the palace, all of the people across the entire kingdom know that kol asher kol ish v'isha sheyavol ha-melech al-chatzer ha-pnimit asher lo yikarei, whoever comes into the king without being invited into the inner chatzer, achat dator la-amit, is absolutely going to be shot on the spot. Other than the one that the king would give over the royal scepter made of gold, and that person could live. Now you may not know that it's been 30 days since I was last called. Now this is the most awful in terms of literary work pasuk in the entire Megillas Esther. I mean, the editor forgot to slip in before the fact that that's the way it goes. And so, in the cheapest way possible, has one of the characters talk out something which, by definition, the other character already knows and never needed to be said, in order to bring out to the reader the information while pretending to be explaining something to the other character. I mean, that's like fifth grade writing. No, it's just awful. Well, everybody knows, maybe you don't know, but everybody knows that any man or woman who doesn't come into the king for 30 days, and of course that doesn't, if he will extend the royal scepter, which is made out of gold, then that person could live. Did you get that? Anyway, I haven't been called to come in for 30 days. I mean, you realize that this is horrific. It's just absolutely horrific. Vayagida le Mordechai es divrei Esther. You'll notice that Hasach didn't. Doesn't say Ve'aged Hatach. It was great when he walks into Esther, Vayavo Hatach, he walks in and he says everything to Esther, but he comes back. He doesn't say anything to Mordechai. Yes, somebody else did the dirty work. Says the Gemara, Mikan She'in Meshivim Alakal Kala. If somebody says something awful, you don't bring back the message to the guy. Let somebody else do it. It's too embarrassing. I mean, you understand what a slap in the face this is to Mordechai? What a shock it is? She's done everything that he's always said, and now she talks to him like a five-year-old. Well, everybody knows, just in case you didn't, and it gives him this whole ridiculous speech. And he's like, what? So, of course, Vayagidu leMordechai et divrei Esther. He's not going to tell him himself. And Mordechai just absolutely loses it. Then he's Vayomer Mordechai leShiv el Esther. You rotten, no good, Nikal Tadami, Ben Avshech, Limalait, Beit HaMelech, Bikol HaYehudim. What, you think you're going to survive this? Never. Oh, you think everybody else should die, and you should sit there having a good time as a queen. So now it's gotten to your head, has it? I mean, that's what these two lines read like. Now let's read between the lines and understand what's happening. Because this is so central, so amazing, that it actually completely changes your life. Here's what she said. She's saying to him, listen here, I should go into the king to be mevakesh for my life. I'd like you to explain why I should do that. I assume that it's because you figure that it might help. And since it might help, it's the only right thing to do, because we don't rely just on God's intervention and so on. We need to do some ishtadlis. And so this is the ishtadlis that I am meant to do. And we call this shadlanut. We actually call it shadlanut. Go in, talk it over, see if you can influence things. I'm to be a lobbyist while you pray. Yes, 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 I understand. There's ishtadlis, there's bitochen. I just want to ask you one simple question, okay? Ishtadlut means finding something that is minimally effective to do, correct? Okay, explain this to me in terms of ishtadlus. Because every S out there on the street, if you would ask them, excuse me, Mr. S, Is this the right thing to do in order to get the king to save the Jewish people? Will look at you and say, man, you got to be pretty dumb to do that. Because everybody knows walking in under these circumstances without any kind of preparation, when you've got 364 days left to deal with the issue and precipitously to decide to walk in there and get shot, is just plain old stupid. That's the point. I'm not here to tell you this. I'm pointing out to you that every idiot knows this. So what is the meaning of what you're saying? It can't possibly be that I'm supposed to go in there to save the Jews in this fashion. This is not called Gestapo. This is called dumb. So you're going to have to give me a better reason. And finally, in Pasuk Yudalid, Mordechai gets to the reason. And her reaction to that is, well, first intelligent thing I've heard you say today. She knows exactly what's going on, and she's pushing Mordechai to correctly analyze what needs to be done. Because until now, what he's saying, in her opinion, is no different than what Amalek is saying, as I'll explain in a moment. And so, he finally gets to the main point. If at this moment you are silent, certainly the Jews will be saved from some other device. The only ones that will be destroyed by all of this is you. Nobody else is going to be destroyed. I don't know what you're thinking. Who knows whether it isn't for this very moment that you arrived at the scene. And her reaction to that is, okay, now you're talking sense. Etc., etc. So let us analyze what it is that he was telling her. Because this is the first time in history that the Kal V'chomer of Moshe Rabbeinu, which was the cause of his death, which is what brought about Purim, which is the need to reconstruct a Yom Kippurim, which is greater than Yom Kippurim, actually comes into play in terms of the way people look at life. So what he tells her is, there is absolutely no need for your hishtadlus. And I was wrong to imply that there was anything that you could achieve in terms of hishtadlus. And yes, it's true. We don't need you to bend down and cry to the king. And indeed she doesn't. She goes and invites him to a party. So everything has changed here. I mean, because what he had said initially was, look, whatever you do, take a chance, bang on the door, say, oh, king, please save us. Not say, would you mind coming to a party together with Haman? So obviously something very profound has changed. Now, with these words, which were prompted by Esther's insistence that what he was saying made no sense at all, and that there was absolutely no basis for a hishtadlut, in which any fool knows that it's the wrong hishtadlut, and in which the only reasonable thing to do would be at least to set the situation up so that the moment that she goes in is an auspicious moment, instead of risking everything on a strange, instantaneous and spontaneous, meaningless response. Instead, she elicits from him what it is that was the real, or should have been the real intent. The fact is that he contradicts himself, because he no longer speaks about Levakesh, Litranenlo, Levakesh v'lefanav al'ama. So it's clear that this is not a clarification on his part of what it was that he meant all along. She, in fact, has pushed Mordechai into a corner to elicit precisely this pasuk from him, and we'll see that it continues clearly with a complete change in the relationship of Esther to Mordechai, in which she takes now the leading position, in which everything has changed, and she forces him to acknowledge what he's really saying. And what he is really saying is the most fundamental change of paradigm that has occurred in the history of Yisrael, even to date, and it sits behind the entire tikkun of Megillat Esther. It creates the meaning of Esther as Hester. It's the only solution to Amalek as Keri. It's the only meaning in a Beit HaMikdash that has no longer any miracles, and that's actually itself hidden. and redefines the nature of the relationship of men and women that was so central all along, both in Gan Eden, in the story of Vashti, and in all that which led both to the destruction of the original Maimed Har Sinai with Kaf Aleihem Har Chagigit, and with the royal motivated rape that led to Esther's taking the place of Vashti. And let us take a look at what he's saying, because it's here that he turns around the death of Moshe, which was because of the missing Kal Vachomer that appeared to make no sense and it made Haman so happy, and he twists it now in the direction in which it becomes the downfall of everything that Haman stood for. On the surface, what he's saying is absolute nonsense, because to the extent that we could say the first part of the pasuk, then we can't say the second half of the pasuk, because if he's convinced, yes, indeed, you're right, you don't need to go litchanenlo levakesh milfanav, I was wrong. We really don't even need you to go in. It's not about us. It's about you. If you're quiet at a time like this, then you are destroying not only yourself as an individual, but the entire historical line that had led to this moment, which was the instant at which it would have been possible to address everything that had gone wrong with your great-great-great-grandfather, that had led to the birth of Haman HaGagi, and that had taken away the malchut from him to be given to Re'o HaTov Mimenu, which was given back to you as the Re'a HaTova Mimena, and which is offering you this opportunity. What opportunity? I thought you just said, we don't need you, Esther. We don't need you, Esther. Thank you. So can I go back to the palace and go to sleep? No. You do that and you're dead. What's the meaning of such a combination? And the fact is that underlying what it was that Esther had said to him was also the recognition that, let us even assume that you have grounds for my doing something like this, and this would be the Ishtadlut. Are you seriously considering the question of the survival of Yisrael to be built on Ki'im Yoshit Lo HaMelech Et Sharvit HaZahav? I mean, can you imagine the insanity of this? You're coming to tell me that everything will be built on the split-second decision as to what kind of mood the Melech is, and will he or will he not extend the magic golden scepter, which will be the source of the survival of Yisrael, which will redefine Maisa Bereishis as being Bishvil Yisrael Shenikra Reishis, which will allow HaKadosh Baruch Hu to say B'ni B'chori Yisrael, which will be Imlo Brisi Yoma V'Layla Chuka Shamayim V'Aretz Lo Samti. This is actually dependent in whether Achashverosh had a nice morning. I mean, that is the most absurd thing I've ever heard in my life. That's what's underlying what. It's not simply the question, this you call Ishtadlus? Why did she throw in the thing about the Sharvit HaZahav? It's all very nice to say, you know, you're taking your life in your hands. I mean, the Sharvit HaZahav is really gratuitous. I mean, that, like, whatever gets a signed form, the king says, don't shoot her. I mean, well, who cares? It's the point that she gets away with it or doesn't get away with it. No, it's that he stretches out the Sharvit HaZahav. I mean, because that's the joke of it. That's the farce of it. That's the Gilbert and Sullivan of it. Yes, indeed. So here we go. We shall either save the entire galaxy, or all will crumble in one gigantic crash if he does not decide to extend the royal scepter. I mean, you find yourself, what, this is, way, this is mad.
Extending the royal scepter is a little bit...
Richie's dirty mind is going.
He's a dirty old man.
From one dirty old man to another, it seems.
All right. So in all seriousness, what in the world is he telling her? If he's saying that it really, I mean, his reaction, now you can see how she elicited his reaction, right? I mean, it's a drastic reaction in which what he's saying is, okay, Esther, the truth is, we don't give a damn about your success. You can go in, not go in, we don't need you at all. It was all a mistake. We couldn't care less if you go in or not. Actually, there's only one reason for you to go in. And that is because otherwise you will be destroyed. Umiyodea. Now look at the other contradiction. Imacharish tacharishi be'et hazot. Then you're definitely dead. Umiyodea. Who knows? Im le'et kazot. Ooh. First it's be'et hazot. It's this very minute or death. Because, after all, it might be that this minute is important. You never know. So then he's contradicting himself in the very pasuk again. You never know if a time like this time, I'm not saying it has to be this time, it's not be'et hazot. You don't see the difference between be'et hazot and le'et kazot? All along, the Megillah has made such careful use of that word ki. Kishoch chamat hamelach. I mean, every last diak of ki was central throughout the Megillah. It's not real, it's sort of like. Then why is he saying im la'it kazot when the whole point that he's trying to make is what a wonderful, amazing, instantaneous, the ramifications of this moment are so powerful that there's absolutely no way to avoid responding to them, and if you did, you're clearly dead. And then, well, of course, I can't say that it's meaningful, but there's always a chance, you know. So you see that we're dealing here with an extremely complex issue. And this complex issue, if you think about it, is precisely the Kal Vachomer of Moshe Rabbeinu, in which we say, which Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, that look, or this is what he was supposed to say, look, the world, indeed, is exactly the same for humans as it is for anything else. Have you ever seen the laws of nature not following the regular statistical laws that allow them to function? They always work. And you believe, nonetheless, that what it is that you do will mechanically change the results of history. So in other words, what he is saying, what he should have been saying is, whatever it is that you do, at the end of the day, will have impact on only one thing, you. The question of what the broader historical patterns are and the impact that you will have upon it is precisely nil. Other than the question of it's being you as opposed to someone else who will be having that aspect impact that was meant to be had. In other words, imagine, I actually saw this happen. Imagine you have a line of children being given vaccination. Okay. Screaming, yelling, I don't want to get that needle and so on. Not the modern kind of vaccination. The nice big poke. Okay, so now here's what you can do, say the parents to the children. One way or another, you are going to be vaccinated, okay? Now, if you tighten your muscles and you fight the needle and you try to get away from it, it is going to hurt like hell. On the other hand, if you relax and get through it, it'll prick you for a moment and you'll be vaccinated and everything will be fine. But the end result is going to be exactly the same. I actually watched a needle break against the muscle of a child. It was so tense. Just busted inside. Never got through. We had to do the whole thing again. It was like, why? Because I'm not going to be the one that's going to get vaccinated here.
I just had this conversation with my daughter this morning.
There you go. Amazing. Very it's another one of these amazing coincidences that the Megillah is made out. So now imagine if Moshe Rabbeinu is saying exactly what he's saying. Look, the results, the Revach Vatzalayim Odi Yudimi Makom Acher, does it really matter in terms of the results? The results are mechanically the same. But let me ask you something else. If you are the one that is the agent of those results, is there a difference? Well, number one, the difference is that you have just reinserted the entire line of history that led to this moment, and now no one will notice that there was an alternative, because you know what? There wasn't. You were the alternative, because you were the one who did it. That's exactly the point. It's very similar to the Ravid who does not understand the implications of the Rambam's discussion of the randomness and the strange attraction within randomness. So therefore, the Rambam says like this. Look, as far as the issue, he says this in Hilchos Teshuvah, as far as the issue of whether HaKadosh Baruch Hu has predicted, not knows, but has predicted in the Chumash, Yadati achare moti ki hashchit hashchitun, Moshe Rabbeinu says, definitely you're going to sin. Okay, so says the Rambam, well, what's the problem in saying that? You're saying it's predictive. In what sense is it predictive? All it's saying is somebody is going to sin. Says the Ravid, that is childish. Imagine the following conversation. Mr. Rasha comes up to the heavens for his din. God says to him, ah, you have sinned. Yes, says Mr. Rasha. This is all in the Ravid. Yes, says Mr. Rasha. But you said I would sin, and therefore clearly it was preordained, and I cannot be held to task. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but I never said who would sin? Yes, yeah, said the Rasha. Then who? And that is the Ravid's Taina to the Rambam. It's what kind of crazy logic is that? And that's exactly what's happening over here. If he's saying, people completely misunderstand that. He's not saying, well, you know, if you don't go, something else will happen. So even if you go, you just happen to be one of many possible things. No. If what happens, happens through Esther, there is no one else. It's only if it doesn't happen through Esther that there is someone else. Now,
are we dealing with alternating universes?
No, not necessarily. Imagine the following scenario. You were talking about classic statistics in terms of quantum mechanics. So let's take a look now at a situation where you have a half-life. You have a sample. Now, I can tell you 100% that in precisely 0.009 times 10 to the minus third power. Exactly half of the atoms in this sample. Whatever isotope it is, or in the next 10 million years, whatever we're talking about, obviously. That precisely half of the atoms here are going to change their identity by emitting a proton, or whatever the case will be, and they will turn into something else. Precisely. Yes, that's right. Well, what do you mean, precisely? You mean we know which? No, we have no idea. Do you have any idea at all? No. And if you had one atom, might be now, might be in 10 quintillion years. So I understand. If there's no predictive possibilities for one atom, how did there suddenly get to be a precise predictive possibility for 100 atoms? Now imagine the following possibility. Atom number 49 has just decayed an instant before the half-life has been reached. Atom number 50 just decays and shouts to atom number 51, don't you decay because you'll screw up the half-life. What do you mean? But wasn't it your turn? No, it's nobody's turn. But why did you have the right to take? I mean, can you imagine a situation like that? Well, I mean, how did they communicate precisely? This is exactly what's going on over here. I can still tell you. And if atom 50 hadn't been the one that had decayed, so it would have been atom 36. What's the difference? You know the difference. That's exactly what Mordechai is saying. The only approach to Mr. Carey, Asher Korcha, Amrul Asher Karau, the Asher Karau is the sense of randomness. It's all random. Says Mordechai, that's right. And that's where the solution lies. I never should have implied that if you don't talk, or if Mr. King doesn't extend his golden scepter, that that's the end. Because that is already done. Now, the only question is, who did it? That's all. So I'm telling you, judge the situation. There's only one person where if that person does it, it is such an ironically perfect ending from the historical point of view that it's the ultimate strange attract. And that's you. Think about having been put here 500 years later with the same guy that you're... I mean, it's nuts. The whole thing is absolutely crazy. Can I be certain about the prediction? Of course not. Nobody can be certain of anything that is statistically based. But I can tell you that it's the very fact that Reva Ratzala Yamod Yudim Makom Acher that makes what you're doing valuable. If the truth was that I had been right when I said go in there and talk to the king, there would have been no point in going in, as you yourself pointed out. If the future of the universe is dependent on whether Achashverosh has a bellyache this morning, then what's the difference if the universe survives or doesn't survive? It's only because it isn't dependent on anything at all that Achashverosh will do. That's already been done. As a matter of fact, I can tell you, and of course this is Achar Advarim Ha'ela, I can tell you the solution is already in place. The only problem is that nobody's acted out to allow it to happen. That's all. Which is exactly what was meant with the words Achar Advarim Ha'ela. Achar Shakadosh Baruch Hu Hikdim Refuah Lamakah. We're not dealing with a problem. We're simply waiting to allow a solution. There never was a problem. That is central to understanding everything. Therefore, you're mistaken, which of course wasn't mistaken the way we're understanding it, but your mistaken question about Hishtadlus is built on an old-fashioned, outworn paradigm. There is no such thing as Hishtadlus that is necessary in order to allow God to mechanically, that's a bunch of absurdities. The only meaning of Hishtadlus is really to insert at the exact moment the response that is required in order to allow the series of events that is a cascade of events that seem to have nothing to do with each other, just like all of the things that are happening here in the Megillah don't really have anything to do with, they all hit at the same moment to produce a particular end. That's what it is, to grab the possibility. Now, if we were talking about Ishtadlus from a mechanical point of view, we would have to make an analysis. Is it more worthwhile to take the risk of having Haman more embedded and being able to have more impact for the destruction of Yisrael by waiting? Or is the waiting more worthwhile because it puts Esther into a better position? Do you understand what this does to your psyche? Forget about what it does to your understanding of the nature of your relationship to God and to action. I mean, it's absolutely pure Christianity. It's nuts. We're playing some kind of ridiculous game in which we're going to raise the chances here. We're going to analyze the cost effectiveness of waiting a week so that Esther can turn on the king and so on. All of this is completely and totally irrelevant. The point of view that we have over here is, Esther, you are being given an opportunity. That's the point. That opportunity, who knows, maybe now. Now, remember what I did when Bigtan Vaseresh I overheard? Did I make analyses? Let's see now. I mean, after all, if we get rid of Achashverosh, then I get my wife back. On the other hand, we may get somebody worse in there. Did I make those cheshbonos? No. Why didn't I make those cheshbonos? Because I said to myself, look, clearly there's an extraordinary opportunity here. The entire idea, I mean, it is so egregiously insane. The list of circumstances that have brought us to this point. And what makes it even more insane is the fact that I figured it out in advance. And look, you looky. I came here because I understood what was going to happen, because I recognized the relationship of my particular talents, my language abilities, to be in the place where language began. I understood that it was going to be all about the deconstruction of language. I knew I had to be here. Do you understand the madness of me overhearing Bigtan Vaseresh speaking in Tursia? Come on. So I acted. I did the only thing that was available. Did I know what would happen? No. I simply gave it over to you. When I tell you to go in, do you know what will happen? Not a clue. You have no idea what will happen. And indeed, as the Gemara says, what happens at the end? She goes in. And what does she do when she goes in? She invites the king to a party. This is the Ishtadlus? Obviously not. Everything has changed now. So says the Gemara, what the heck did she invite him to a party? What does that have to do with anything? What was she thinking? Okay, so we have a brilliant analysis in the Gemara. Marat Esther, what did Esther think in inviting Haman to a party? Says Rebbe Eliezer, well, look, it's a trap. What kind of trap? I don't know, but it says in the Pasuk, Yihi Shulchanam Lefneim Lepach. When they eat, they entrap themselves. There's dependencies created. I don't know where it's going to go, but I set a trap. Okay. Rabbi Yoshua says, look, you know, it's all part of the holy book. Imra av sona'acha, chileo lechem. I mean, you know, that comes all from the family. Rabbi Meir says, well, she didn't want Haman to get a chance to actually rebel and take over the kingdom. So she figured she'd keep him busy. Okay. Rabbi Yehuda says, well, she wanted to make sure that he wouldn't suspect that she was Jewish. If she's playing up to Hitler, she must not be Jewish. Rabbi Nehemiah says, she wanted the Jews to figure that she's on the other side so they would continue to pray, because otherwise they would just figure Esther will handle this whole problem. Rabbi Nehemiah, sorry, that was Rabbi Nehemiah. Rabbi Yehuda says, she didn't want anybody to know she was Jewish, right? Rabbi Yossi says, she didn't know what was going to happen, but it was very important for him to be available at any minute. The moment that she would catch the instant that something could be done, he needed to be there. Otherwise, it would be too late to act. Reb Shimon ben Menasseh says, listen, if I have to do this ridiculous seduction of this hairy bear, then God at least will finally have mercy, and he'll do a miracle. Reb Yeshua ben Korcha says, let him think that I've got some kind of romance going with Haman. That way, he'll kill both of us. Rabbi Gamliel says, I don't know, but Achashverosh can never make up his mind about anything, so just give him new data and something will change. Rabbi Gamliel says, nah, listen, you better hear Rabbi Elazar Amadoy's pshat. Rabbi Elazar Amadoy says, it's all about Kina. Remember, I mean, whatever type of weird inferiority complexes Haman had, and everybody else is constantly looking at how high you, how low you bow, and how high you stand, and where your chair is. These guys are sick. So the thing to do is get everybody jealous of him. Something's bad. Stir up the pot. That's all. Stir up the pot. Okay? Abaye v'Rava, bring a pasuk. It says, parties are bad for these people. B'chumama shitet mishtehem. Let's make a party. Anyway, Rabbi Bar Avuha bumps into Eliyahu HaNavi. So he asks Eliyahu HaNavi, he says, you know, we've been having this big discussion in our Beit Midrash about what precisely was Esther thinking. And he looks at it like he's crazy. Well, all of the above, of course. But what do you mean all of the above? It's completely contradictory. I mean, you can't say you want to be bumped off and then say it in order for her to be able to influence his determination about what to do. How can it be all of the above? But that's the whole point. Of course, it's all of the above. Because I am not responding to a plan of what's going to happen. I'm responding to the opening of being in position for whatever could happen. And that's the point that Elio is making. What kind of funny thing is that to ask? What did she have in mind? As if she had something particular in mind. Each and every one of the above has exposed some facet of the possibilities that allowed the... You're saying that's ishtadlus? Of course not. How could it be ishtadlus to be going in 20 different directions at once? It's a complete change from the idea of lavo v'litchanein lifnei ha'melech u'levakesh kesha lama, a complete and total change. So exactly the idea of why it needs to be now is what he's telling her. The idea here is not ishtadlus. We are not in a game of raising the chances, lowering the chances, hoping you'll be in a good mood, figuring out the way people, unfortunately, how much they make their lives dependent on the most absurd nonsense, in which the lawyer will find out who's in the jury, and the question whether this judge is inclined nicely to lawyers that have red hair, or maybe, I mean, that's literally the things that people think about. That's what ishtadlus drags you down to. Says Mordechai, this is not what we're dealing with. So you have an opportunity to make this the day of Esther. That's what it is. You're saying, but something else could happen. Yeah, sure, he could die of a heart attack. And then what? Then nobody even notices. And then nothing happened. Do you understand the beauty, the glory, the humor, the eternity of what's involved in it being you who becomes the Rebbe Batzalah Yamod Yudim and not the heart attack? That's the point. This is about you. And all of our opportunities in life are never to solve real problems. They're to be available for insertion into a history that is filled with the most insane possibilities that are totally out of our hands, in which all of a sudden we find ourselves swept up in the currents of history in a way that, my gosh, we're the right person in the right place at the right time. Nothing to do with your brilliant talent or anything else. And there you are. You would have been there 3 months later, nothing would have happened. Somebody would have sold Das before you. It's about this, about Esther as well. Therefore, he says, don't start arguing with me about whether it's effective. It's not meant to be effective. And don't start telling me, well, couldn't we plan it better and put it off? How do we know that it isn't this instant? If it's all about what you can do, then the planning of, let's get the better time for what I can do, is crazy. Maybe the better time is the worst time. Maybe by the better time, he won't want you at all, Ahasuerus. You say he hasn't invited you for 30 days. How do you know that you'll even be queen in another 30 days? It's now or never. That's what I'm telling you. Because that's the entire point of view. There are no other alternatives. And what's amazing, you remember that we went back to the Pticha of the Megillah in the Gemara of Ba'atzaltayim imacha mekarel b'shiflut yadayim yidlof habayi. This is the simple meaning. The simple meaning of the verse is b'shvil, as the Gemara says, atzlut shaitabem b'yisrael shalo esku b'teira, therefore nasa sono shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu mach, sheneamar ha-mikare b'mayim aliyotav. So who is the mikare? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mikare b'mayim aliyotav. And since it says yimach, what is mach? Mach means pour. Shenemar imachu mi'erkecha. Okay, but what is the deeper meaning of that? Atzaltayim yimach ha-mikare. Did it ever occur to you that the roofer is another way of saying the one who makes coincidences happen? Ha-mikare is the author of coincidence. Is there a relationship between the mikare and agag? which is, after all, where you do the mikare, isn't it? So is the nature now of the shiflut yadayim yidlof habayit? You allow the roof to leak, but you don't enter into the hole that is open for you. That's the idea. Take that opportunity. You fill that hole. You don't act. Ba'atzaltayim. Atzaltayim doesn't mean you never act. It means there's no immediate responsiveness, because what's the difference if it's today, tomorrow? But that's the whole point that he's making. And as the Gro points out over here, the idea of not going in today, now, instantly, is exactly the idea that's expressed in the Pasuk in Mishlei, Gam mitrape b'melachto, chaver hur aku le'ish bashchit. So this is somebody who doesn't do his job as it needs to be done, is mitrape b'melachto, he might as well be a destroyer. Because in not doing that which needed doing, he breaks the entire process down so that now it switches to something of much lower level. That's the his addition, which connects it directly to Batzatami Machamakra. He doesn't take it through till the end. But clearly it's exactly the same issue. So this, you understand the profundity of the change in paradigm? What this means is that the fundamental way of relating to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the recognition that there is a basic, a primal pattern in the way things work out. It's that pattern that allows, ultimately, for the way all mikra works out, which to us seems to be amazing coincidences. Insane coincidences. That's the main problem people have with evolution. Too many coincidences. But everything in life is exactly that way. It's mad coincidences that allow all things to function because of the incredible opportunities that are provided you by statistical possibilities. That's the whole point. Such that a world of random possibilities is far more expressive of the underlying presence of the Yichud Hashem, because an underlying pattern that allows me to say, look, it ain't going to happen. In the end, the bad guys aren't going to win. How do you know? It never has. Over thousands of years, it never has. So that what appears to be all random on the local level keeps moving in a particular direction in the greater development of humanity in exactly the ways that we know that it needs to go, in exactly the same way that instead of stopping somewhere with a stasis that allowed for environments to be filled in a very effective fashion, complexity just kept getting more and more complex. So that one could almost say whatever could happen will. If there's a chance for the development of something that is indeed more complex, it happens. That underlying expression is so much more powerful than a God who plays with Legos that it turns Christianity and creationism into literally a joke. I mean, it's just an absurdity. This is your vision of creation. A great man up in the sky picks up a pile of Legos, which are the shape of molecules, and puts them together and presents you with his latest brilliant creation, which, I mean, any civilization of reasonable development would be able to do just as well, if not better, because certainly it's not very intelligently designed the way that life forms have evolved. Obviously, the Yehudi, Yechidi aspect of Mordechai is the expression of the Yichud Hashem that lies beneath the ability to say that line. That's not our problem. Never was. Our problem always was, why are you here? And that's why I went every single day. I've been here for year after year after year with nothing happening. Every single day. Why do you think I came every single day? Because today could be the day. That's why. And because it has absolutely nothing to do with how many days have gone by. Zero to do with that. I know there will be a day. Well, today's the day. And either you're going to respond, or we could throw out all of those days and all the centuries that led to this day. Esther, who now was the one that, in our understanding, had set up precisely this response, says, Vatomer Esther Lashiv al Mordechai. Well, lest the old guy's talking sense. Leich kenoset kol ha'yehudim. Now, there's not even a moment of acknowledgement, nothing. It's all said as a command. And of course, it ends with that Kekola should sivta alav Esther, the next pasuk. It is a command. It's a straight out command. Okay, no further discussions. You've met the requirements that I've set for an intelligent response. Now let's get back to the job. Since you have finally gotten to understand that the issue is not the survival of Yisrael, the issue is me. I want to see whether you're serious. Let us have a 3-day fast for me. Not about the Jews, for me. That's what I want. I want to see. Is this what everyone shares? They want Esther to be successful, not to be saved. If that's the case, and this was the remarkable comparison that we made, which I think was one of the most beautiful, beautiful scenes ever made in a movie that brought this out. I mean, I can't think of anything that did it to with this extent. You have over here a movement of thousands of years of history in Middle Earth, and the question of Mordor, the creation of darkness, exactly the issues here. Choshech, Hester, evil, the elements of Amalek, hatred of meaning, the desire to destroy love and anything that makes any sense. And you were working out an entire approach in which it will be possible to destroy Mordor, taking away their concentration and allowing the entire mocker of their power to be wiped out. And so we bring an army and we're sitting there in front of the gates of Mordor, where the entire idea is, as they go rushing into their certain death, which they think is for Frodo. Now, is that not an insane contradiction? What do you mean for Frodo? Who cares about Frodo? What does it have to do about Frodo? We're saving the entire universe. You're talking about Frodo. Let Frodo drop dead. And this is exactly what Esther says over here. If that's really what it's about the significance of a human being's act. Because in the end, that's all that is meaningful. In the end, if you don't care about me, then why bother surviving? Because in the end, you don't care about you. You have a view of reality that leaves you nothing to do in the world. Your presence in the world is irrelevant. So if you recognize that what's important is Frodo, and by the way, that comes out in the Taina of Mordor as well, where they bring out the coat of mail and they say, ah, so we see it really bothers you what's happened to your little friend. I mean, what were they thinking? What is it, no gay, our little friend? We're talking about this major war. They really think that this is what it is? Yes, they know. Amazingly, they know that this is stabbing at your very heart that you should be concerned for Frodo. They think it's a weakness. It's always like that. The Arabs believe, these foolish Jews caring about the survival of one idiotic soldier where we're ready to give up our lives at the drop of a hat for nothing. This will allow us victory because we don't care. And they do. But in reality, this is the only source of victory. And this is what's happening here. So she says, if this is what it's really about, I want a 3-day fast for me. So you, 3 days, night and day, you are not to eat, not to drink. No one in the city. And I too will fast. So it's a very interesting diuk in which the Al-Sheikh is medayik that Cain is 70 hours instead of 72, which is 3 days, because the Gemara says that someone who hasn't had anything to eat or drink for 72 hours starts to stink and has horrible breath, and she can't go in like that. That's interesting. So therefore she says, well, I'm only going to fast Cain. I'm only going to fast 50 hours, 70 hours. You guys have to fast all 72 hours, the 3 days. And so in doing so, I will come into the king against the rules. And in a deeper way, as the Gemara identifies it, Asher lo chadat doesn't mean against the rules, it means against the religion. Because basically what she's offering is to seduce the king. And up until now, so it's because I'll put it, up until now I was an anusa. Therefore, I was muteret to you. At this point, I'm going in there to be proactive, in which case I'm doing the seducing. And therefore, kasher avadati avadati, the same way that I was lost to my father's family In everything you became to me. And that goes, harkens back to the Bemot Aliyah the Ima, the Kacha Mordechai Lo Levat, which was the sexual relationship that was now going to be violated permanently. And I will be lost forever for you. Of course, in the other sense, it's also a giving yourself over to whatever the results is. Whatever happens, happens. That's the Kasher Avat Yavad. It's a simple reading of it. But that means, the way that Chazal see it, that the direct relationship of Asher Lo Chadat, one has the question, why indeed is that mutter? In other words, up until now, we say that the idea of Esther is that she was Karka Olam, so that her passivity is what was matir her for Mordechai, because she's an Anusa. Now that she's saying that she's not Anusa, so why is she allowed to do this? I mean, she is an Eshet. Is she requesting a get in advance? What exactly is going on? But note that the next word is Vayavor Mordechai, which Chazal mean Vayavor Mordechai, and it's Rashi's explanation. Vayavor Mordechai al dat. He violated religion. How did he violate religion? Because when she set to fast for 3 days, she canceled Pesach. Remember that those 3 days, this is talking about Yud Gimel, so that means that they're going to fast straight through Yom Tov. There's not going to be any Seder Shel Pesach, and so on. So he too was over al dat. Two psukim, and one and the other, one after the other. Vayas kechol asher tzivta alav Esther. Note the unbelievable that at Mamar Mordechai Esther osa Mordechai tziva alea asher lo tagid. It's all about Mordechai's ability to command her and her immediate response to whatever Mordechai commands without question. The inversion of the relationship over here that began with, listen here, Atach, you go tell Mordechai what I tell you, and stop telling me what he told you to tell me. And that's what we saw before. But it's Aveo El Mordechai, which Atach is so shocked by that he doesn't go back. As Chazal say, Ein Meshivina La Kalkala, no, I'm supposed to, this is a kilko, and I'm supposed to tell him a nasty message like that, and so on. I'm not going back. Let somebody else do it. So somebody else goes. As we're, the Gemara's Medayak over there. He didn't go. It says that they told him. Vayagidu. Vayagidu was supposed to be him. All of a sudden, everything has changed. Her new assertion of the way in which she's going to be directly addressing Mordechai. This is what you tell him back. Lashiva al Mordechai. I want that message to get to him. Not the idea. This is what you tell him. And so when he does it specifically with that inversion, Kuchol Asher Tzifta Alav Esther. And indeed, as we see over here, he's really over all that. So he's going to now cancel Yom Tov. So as the Medrash says, and he says to her, how are we supposed to do that? I mean, this is going to be a violation of the Yom Tov Rishon Shel Pesach. This is the 14th of Nisan, the 15th of Nisan, the 16th of Nisan is supposed to be taking place. There's going to be a 3-day Ta'anit. And she says to him, and this is a remarkable reconstruction of the whole Marta Bat Baitos issue at the Churban, which ends, and not really Marta Bat Baitos, it's all Rabbi Yochanan's issue of Ashrei Adam Afachei Tamid, Mark Shalibo, Yipol Bera'ah. It's exactly the same thing in the inverse. He tells her, but how can we do that? And she says to him, you idiot, there's no Jews, there's no matzah, there's no morer. So nothing. What are you talking about? Which is exactly what happens, and of which Rabbi Yochanan is pointing out, that this is precisely the reaction of, well, what are we supposed to do? I mean, we don't expect people to make the mistake of thinking that you're allowed to put a mum and kutch him. So surely we should allow the Romans to destroy the Beit HaMikdash? What's certainly what? There's Mak Sheli Bo Yipol Barad. This is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with the unimportant issues. We're dealing with the important issues. You say this is the problem? Or someone, well, so then let's kill him. What? Let's kill him. So then somebody will say that you're Chayav Nisa for being Matir Mum B'Kachim. What the heck is wrong with you? You think in 100 years from now anybody's going to remember what the meaning is of Matir Mum B'Kachim if you don't deal with this? That's what she's telling him. This is what's important. Pesach. But you see that that means that the level of the conversation is taking everything from the point of view of the ultimate results of what's coming out. Because otherwise, well, I mean, what do you mean? Again, if we're defining a proper way of action, proper way of action isn't defined by your guesses as to what's going to be effective. You're telling me you're making a ta'anit. And so God said, don't make a ta'anit. I'll best understand. Who's the ta'anit for? I mean, aren't there rules for ta'anit? I mean, if I told you to stand on your head, spit wooden nickels, and that will make God respond, you'll look at me like I'm crazy. So if you're telling me to make a ta'anit, I mean, the purpose of a ta'anit is the ta'anit. You should go back to her and say, what does one have to do with the other? We're going to make a ta'anit, so... Don't you see, the Ta'anit itself has to be defined as something effective. In and of itself, it means nothing. So either you're doing something which is defined as the correct way to respond to God's requirements for tshuva, tefillah, however you want to understand it. So then that's exactly the same in the inverse as what he was saying to do with Achashverosh. Am I telling you to do something intelligent? No. Am I telling you that this should work for Achashverosh? No, because it's Asher Lo Kedat in terms of Achashverosh. That's what she pointed out to him. You're telling me. This was the original response, right? You're telling me, go in and discuss it. Go in and discuss it. The very fact that I would go in would be the reason for him to absolutely lose it. What do you mean, go in and discuss it? It's Asher Lo Kedat, the simple meaning. It's against all of the rules. What's the point of doing something against the rules? So if I ask you the same thing, and about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what do you mean, make a tanit? That's not a tanit, that's just the chait. What kind of tanit is it? What is some kind of weird religious thing that you're doing? That has nothing to do with what God wants. You see how crazy it is? It's exactly the same. You don't see. I knew you didn't. I could see it in your eyes. The Asher Lo Kadat is the same in both locations. If you're trying to speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you do it the way he tells you to speak to him. If you're going to say, I feel much better playing with my rosary while I pray to you and say, Elohei Avraham, Yitzchak, v'Yaakov, you'd be thrown into a loony bin. So what is the point of saying, I will make a tanit, which God likes taniot, you know, for some reason, so we'll do it all the wrong way, where it's against the rules. You might as well say, okay, guess what? Let's build a boma and bring a carbon so we can prove how much we want the Beis HaMikdash. That'll get him to bring the Beis HaMikdash. Well, what kind of nonsense is that? That's a shirloka dat. So what? How do you intend to prove something? By going against the rules. In the same way, that's what you told me to do to Achashverosh. So now, in getting you to understand that the rules were meaningless, the follow-up on that is to get Mordechai to understand that the rules are meaningless in terms of what he needs to do vis-a-vis HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well. That's unbelievable. Why? It can't be coincidental that we have this parallelism here. It's one pasuk after the next. It's clearly the same type of anhaga, and it's addressing the underlying issue of why aren't you following the rules? Because it just boils down to Obama. You want to do things your way. What is the meaning of doing things your way? Why would that be in any sense a tikkun to whatever it is that has gone wrong? So that means, remarkably, let's consider something else. What's the point of this tanit? We know that the whole issue of Purim ultimately, the Hatzolah of Purim ultimately, is purely in terms of Teshuvah. That's how it's the Purim, Kippurim, Yom Kippurim, the relationship of being Mitaken, everything that the only thing that allowed the Beit HaMikdash actually, the Godol, Hasaras, Tabas, from all the words of the Nevi'im, there was a response. The response was generated by the Knesa of Esther? Or the response was generated by the fact that they were under threat of extermination? The Megillah is making it clear that the response is generated by the Knesa of Esther. I mean, why in the world would that be the response? It's shocking. What you should do is you should go around and speak to all the people and you should tell them, look, we only got into this because we were nifshal and whatever it is, and this is what you need to do. So it's clear, had that been done, it would have been exactly the same as all of the absurd tshuva exercises that we have nowadays. You know, everything needs to be fixed. We should all put on better sheitlach, get rid of the Indian sheitlach, make sure that everybody dresses with more tzniut. Well, whatever. It's all the same typical things in which nothing changes. Because by definition, all you're trying to do is do the same thing which was wrong in the first place, even better. I mean, how could such a thing possibly be a tikkun? So in a sense, getting out of that box demands a completely changed paradigm. She is forcing him to acknowledge that the model is completely flawed. This whole idea of ishtatlus and being master, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaGan is really there for you, and you'd require nisim, and maybe he'll do a nais, and so on and so forth. That's not what you want. The idea of the change paradigm is getting out of the construct that was always going to drag you back into this frame of reference that you initially started out with, which is exactly why it's so frustrating for anyone who's not inside that frame of reference to see people believing that tikkun lies in getting back to what had created the problem in the first place. This is not only in religious sites, so in terms of ideological movements of any kind, social movements, revolutions, and so on and so forth. It always ends up that people think that they're going to fix things by redoing the very issues that were clearly to any thinking person at the root of the failure, but persuading themselves that wasn't the root of the failure. The root of the failure is we didn't do them enough. It should have been done even better. You know, this was the great leap forward that threw China into 30 years of absolute turmoil and destruction. We weren't revolutionary enough, you understand. This is the solution. And that's what always has to happen. It's inevitable that that's going to happen unless you touch the roots of what went wrong. So in touching those roots, we get much closer to Amalek. You understand? Haman is the guy who thought up the poor. Haman is the guy that was the Asher Karahu. The Asher Korach HaBaderech was originally an opening to randomness as an attack upon meaning. The only way to deal with that is to take the random and to make it the source of meaning instead of an attack upon meaning. There is no, the V'nahafochu is essential, not just as the Gilbert and Sullivan aspect of it. It's not just a farce of it. It's conceptually of a V'nahafochu. You need to embrace the very issues that so scared you that in your response, you ended up ruining everything. We've seen this happen again and again in the past century. It's about the most common thing, right? Nothing more striking than watching the entire civilization of Europe wiped out in terms of Judaism and deciding that the response is to rebuild. I mean, it's astonishing how perverse such a thing is. I mean, if somebody would tell you this, and you had a, you know, and it wasn't just the way things are, and you accepted it, and they told it to you as a story, you know, so you wouldn't realize that it's referring to what you've actually watched happen. I mean, you would think that what we're dealing with is insanity. You watch everything that has been built up for centuries upon centuries upon centuries torn apart to the point where the elements that we saw in the originally in Daniel, where he comes, the entire book comes to get people used to the idea that it's a completely different world than we thought it was. That Malchus is a different concept than we thought it is. That Yisrael is a different concept. That Golus is a different concept. It's a new world, exactly. That took him the whole book, and it left him shattered to the point where he describes himself. So I couldn't pick myself up off the floor. Now, that is a modern terminology that he uses. I couldn't pick myself up off of the floor. So to take that, yet this additional step, this is not an additional step. This is a complete loosing for everything that we once thought was antithetical to us and turns out to be the basis of everything. That's exactly what is going to happen here, and it's the only possible way to say it, to go back. We find exactly the same thing happened here. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes the entire focus of your religiosity, your ability to be Eved Hashem, your system of chinuch, the way in which you're able to support yourselves, takes it, throws it into the toilet bowl with you with it. So that now the only life that you have is a life that forces you to confront the very issues that you spent 1,000 years building barriers to experiencing. So what's your reaction? Not as Daniel learned, look, the only reaction is that we need to go out and change what it is that we believe we are, to live, if necessary, within the palace of Nebuchadnezzar, and to be something other than we thought we were. That's the Ashik Knesset HaGdolah. This is the whole idea. The very things that you thought were the end, no more Godel, no more Gibor, no more Nora, this doesn't make any sense. If those very things were the Achzaras after Ad Yoshna, there is no other way. It has to be that the enemy is the friend. Therefore, the V'nahafochu is going to include a complete inversion of all issues. That's clear. There's nothing else to do for it. So the Vayavor al Dat can only be that what's happening here is of a level that no longer exists within the way that we've been able to think about it. The truth is, halakhically speaking, it's a major issue. I mean, there are very few people who discuss this because there's no misgeret for it. In the halakha, there is no misgeret for a woman to go and seduce somebody in order to achieve a great victory or for creating now a ta'anit where it's a violation or bringing a korban with it. That's all crazy. But if you consider what would be the meaning of a ta'anit that isn't in order to achieve the survival of Jewry, but is instead, she's forcing the issue. She forces the issue. She tells Mordechai, you go out there and you get them to understand. You gather them together. Knoset kol ha'yudim. I want everybody to understand what is at stake. Not their survival. Me. I want them to be tsumo alai. That's what I want. It's got to be for Esther. That's the whole idea. What were they thinking? What did it mean to them to hear Mordechai say that kind of thing? They were already decked out in Sakveif, Yutzal Rabin. That had happened before. So that means that what's being achieved here is something completely new. The nature, therefore, of the Ta'anit is exceedingly responsive to exactly what Esther is doing. Now, this is a bit subtle, but think for a moment. The biggest problem to Tshuva. The biggest problem to Tshuva, really, is that we do not want to lose what we did. It's not simply that it's difficult for me to get out of the paradigm that led me into the situation in which I view those issues as valuable. That's the real thing. You know, it's all very nice to talk about Tshuva. I won't do it again. I'll be a good boy. Even if you are a good boy, that's not Tshuva. It has nothing to do with doing it again. It has to do with the question of what was done. Tshuva relates to the past. As the Rambam says, changing all of your ma'asim letova has nothing to do with Tshuva. It's bidarkei Tshuva, but it certainly doesn't even begin to touch on the issue of Tshuva. And yet Tshuva is what was required here. We're going back all the way back to Tzibur Nebuchadnezzar, Yishtachavah Letzelem. Why can't you do that? A, because you're dovuk to the paradigm that led you to that. B, because all of the neural passageways that make you appreciate what life is have been created in that way. And C, if you gave me an opportunity to press a button and to change who I am by saying that I never did that, I wouldn't press it, because then I wouldn't be me. What idiot would press such a button? How can you afford to press such a button? You understand that everything that you are is a result of, whether it's good or bad, this is the reality. So how am I supposed to change that and to admit that, what, that I'm not happy with what I am? Is that really true? People are not happy with what they did? I'm not happy with what I am? Tell me, who would you like to be? I'll press the button. Who would you like to be? There's not one person in the world that you would like to be for no amount of money. So how am I supposed to do Tshuva? And here is the crux of the matter. If I can fast for Esther, I can do Tshuva. What does one have to do with the other? Everything. Because what it turned out that Esther was doing here was recognizing that the underlying patterns of reality are not going to be affected in any mechanical way by what she's doing. The only thing that's going to be important is, as he told her, we don't need you to talk to the Melech. I'm sorry I ever indicated that. Actually, as far as I'm concerned, you can go away and go back to bed and move into the palace and think you'll be saved. What do I care? And we don't need you. That's basically the message. Instead of kind of turning around and encouraging her and saying, Esther, how can you talk like that? What, you think you're going to go back home? Actually, you're the only one that's going to be affected by this. Doesn't matter to anybody else. You got to understand that. Okay, so then that means that her entire vision of reality now has to be defined by the concern for the way in which life presents opportunities that must not be turned away. It's the responsiveness to the opportunity that's the issue. You want to say, I'll put it off till tomorrow? Forget it. You didn't respond to the opportunity. What are you telling me? You believe there's another opportunity? I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. But I do know one thing. You're already dead. It doesn't matter. Because you've destroyed the meaning of everything that was offered to you on a silver platter. So what are you telling me? Now Haman will die of a heart attack. That's really wonderful. And we'll make a holiday for heart attacks. Is that it? I mean, the whole point over here is that the Chag expresses Esther. That's the point. It's not just that the Ta'anit expresses Esther. Everything about the day expresses Esther. So therefore, what happened over here was a break between the mechanical and the human behavior of throwing oneself into just the vortex of possibilities. What that boils down to is that if, in fact, she is the one with whom Rav Avatzalah is Eimed LaYehudim, it's still true that it's Bimakom Acher. It isn't that she has made it happen in any way. It's just that she was the one that it happened to. So she becomes now a channel for what's happening, but not the creator of what's happening, right? That's why she doesn't have a plan. I don't need to be the creator of what's happening. I'm only there in order to allow whatever's going to happen to be happening in such a way that beautiful old Esther is at the bottom of it. That's what's the difference.
She's conscious.
Not a heart attack. If that's the case, that break between what happens and your part in what happens is the nature of tshuva. Obviously, you don't want to change what it is that you've become. You just don't want to be the one to have done it. And that's exactly the same thing in the reverse. Tshuva doesn't change and say that it didn't happen. Tshuva said that it was a schus that it happened, not a chayva that it happened. That's all. It doesn't change the maaseh. So as the Gemara says, so avonotav hofchim l'schuyot. What do you mean hofchim l'schuyot? I'd rather just erase it, God, forget about it. No. I want to catch you in bed with your pants down. Absolutely. But I'm, no. But it happened to you. It's not you. That's the idea. And so basically what it is that fasting for Esther opened the door to was a recognition that the human condition has in it two completely different elements. The perspective of the history that takes place is a history that takes place on a level in which, for all intents and of how it is that I see it from the outside, is that this is the story of the human condition. This is the history. This is what it is. I look at it almost from the outside with a smile. How cute. Now, at the time, I didn't think it was cute. At the time, it was deadly. But the farce element of the Megillah addresses exactly this issue. So you have little kids that are describing the very cute beauty pageant in which everybody is getting screwed under the table, you understand? This is not a very cute Miss Universe contest at all. That's not to say that normal Miss Universe contests are so beautiful either. I'm saying, but it's all this idea of the pretense, and it's all the idea of the face and the aimless to el fanim. But what's really happening may be very nasty, and yet the level of farce is exactly what's happening in the four Frodo. We all understand that what that means is the history of the world, but that part is, that already happened for all intents and purposes. Kadosh Baruch Hu was already mocked in Refuah L'Makom. The world is what it is. The human condition is what it is. I am what I am. Now the question is, what is my role in that? So could Haman turn around and say, well, I gave the Jews a great new holiday. I deserve all the credit. No, he can't, you see, because that isn't what he did. He wasn't making himself available to give the Jews a whole brand new holiday.
About the screen credits after the movie's over. Talking about.
In a sense, and Chazal bring this out in such a beautiful way. Beautiful matter. Chazal say this. You know, the world is really like a horse. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is really the rider. Now, if you were an anthropologist on Mars, and you just get a brief look at the life forms on this planet, then you would conclude that since the horse is dragging everybody around to wherever it wants to go, and using them to provide it its bathroom and its food, its currying and its clothes, that obviously they're the enslaved bipeds that are there in order to take care of the horse, which is really the dominant life form, and has particularly, in Persia especially, yes, which the horse was all, and has managed to breed these bipeds that could get along a little bit more easily in order to take good care of us. But in reality, says the Medrash, that's not the case. Actually, the horse is a mechanical motor that we call horsepower. What you do with the horsepower is channeled by the driver. So the horsepower could just as easily be hidden under the hood. It would still be the horsepower. The mistake of mechanics is to believe that you are actually going to be the one who is driving the horse, when in reality, you're just the horse, says the Medrash. But that's exactly what it was that Haman thought he was. Oh, he's the driver. But you see, that's why he asks for the king's horse. The king is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Melech is always Melech, Malchei HaMelech. So he says, so what do you want? I want the horse. Shad Melech Rochev Alav. And in reality, he turns out to be utterly horsepower. Because every last thing that he did provided immense energy in which it all was used against him. And so the faster he pedaled, the faster the guillotine came down on his head. And, oh, thank you. I was wondering how we'd get that down, right? So it's a very funny story on that level when you confuse your identity. But from that point of view, the entire perspective of humanity, of what we've become, it's all on that. There is a level in which it's just happening. Now the question is, what role do you want to play in what's happening? And that's what Mordechai is saying to her. What role do you want to play? If you can then get beyond that level and you can say, okay, well, if that's the case, so about all the things that happened to me, I don't have to be responsible. I have to be the one, therefore, that is now part of the understanding of how much good that did and be committed that I would never have done it, that I lose, not only lose nothing, I gain everything. Because now doing that would allow a Haman to take credit for Purim. What happens is that when I recognize that what's really happening is anyway not the result of the mechanics of it. It's the way that it needs to be. In exactly the same way that looking back at my own history, I can say that everything that went wrong is what needed to be. Just like this guy in 127 hours. What's his name?
Ralston.
Okay, so Ralston says this was the greatest moment of my life. That is not the greatest moment of your life to cut off your own hand, break your own bones, and manage to free yourself from a 5-ton rock. This is the greatest moment of your life. In tears. Yes. The greatest moment of my life. Does that mean you wanted it to happen? That's not the issue. It did happen. This is me. It was the greatest thing that ever happened to me. That's definitely true. There's no question about it. There's people who say that about living in a concentration camp. The greatest moments of my life was that.
Or being in a war situation.
Or being in war, for sure.
Not the transient in prison. Every moment counted.
Yeah, exactly.
You were alive.
You were alive, yeah. So the same thing is you're saying, but this was horrible. I'm so embarrassed. What does that have to do with it? The fact is that that love affair may have been somebody else's wife, but it was the greatest thing that happened. That's the fact. It was the greatest thing that ever happened to you. Now, would you ever sleep with another man's wife? Never. Are you sorry that you were involved? Absolutely. Would you do it again? No. I'd give it all away. All that it's worth, I would give away. But only because I won't really. It's the same as this.
It's me.
It's the same as the Sarah Mishtaleah. I'm ready to give it all away, but because I'm ready to give it all away, I don't. I don't have to. That's the point. So if that's the case, then the deepest achievement of Yom HaKippurim, which is the Sarah Mishtaleach, is the essence of what is happening here. Therefore, what Esther is saying to him is, look, if what we're dealing with is to be or not to be, you're telling me that the only possible response on this level is what dictates how it is that I act. Then what you're saying is that this is not part of a normal world. This is something that's happened to us. If we're being told that the idea here is to the rules will mean things only in the context of the survival of what you are, then that means by definition that the survival comes before any rules. Because we're no longer talking about the normative application of a halacha to a situation. We need to do this tshuva if there's ever going to be a Pesach. That's the point. And if not, then everything is hopeless. You're 100% right, Reb Zacharia. We cannot afford to kill somebody for putting him in a mum. But that isn't the issue, really, is it? The issue is whether there will be a Beis HaMikdash that has mumim, just as over here. Therefore, I say, if they can really appreciate what they're fasting for, then we have a chance at escaping what destroyed our ability to do tshuva on any level, except it's of a new paradigm, an understanding of the human condition in a completely different way, a perspective in which I could see things from the outside entirely and understand that it's not I who am doing this. And in this sense, there's an amazing Zohar, which nobody understands, which is the real, most profound aspect of what it is that happens with Esther. The way the Zohar puts it is, Esther never slept with Ahasuerus. It was a shade that looked like Esther. And that is absolutely correct. That's exactly what happened. Because when one does teshuvah about having slept with Ahasuerus, what happens is not that you're no longer in bed with whoever you're in bed with. What happens is that it isn't you. So what is there is basically a non-human counterpart of pure randomness that takes the place of what it is that was you, where your will and presence is no longer there. Therefore, says Esther to Mordechai, if it's true that it is possible for me to go in there, it's only if it's also possible for you to recognize that there's a completely different level of reality. You get everybody to recognize it, and you forget about Pesach. okay? Then we're evens. Then I have a chance of making it out of here. But otherwise, it's not going to work. Nothing I do is going to work. Nothing anybody does. Either we do survive or we don't survive. There's no point in my involvement in the process at all. So her ability to throw herself in with the kasher avadati is really on two levels. Really and truly on two levels. If I survive, I survive. If I don't survive, I don't survive. And it doesn't matter to me anymore. But in a deeper sense, I have to go through the motions of losing everything in order to be me. That is an astonishing end to the perek. Now, in effect, what's happened is that what appeared to be, as Chazal had identified, the tzniut of Rachel, the tzniut of Shaul, the tzniut that led to Esther, is totally violated by her thinking, by her behavior, by her chutzpah, by her becoming the boss over Mordechai, which, by the way, is consistent now throughout the rest of the story. Where the Chachamim say, but you're not allowed to. I'm telling you, this is what you're doing. You want to know the Makor and the Posek? Here, I'll send it to you. She's the one who tells them how to know that there's a heter to write Megillas Esther. She's the one who sends around the Igeret. She's the one who defines everything for everybody. The Chachamim, Achashverosh, who becomes putty in her hands, and so on. What happened to good old do-it-all, every man's dream, pliable Esther? What happened to her? What happened to... You mean it was all a fake? You mean he was right all along? She did have it all planned out? You mean she was a manipulator from the first moment? This is what we'll need to consider in the continuation.